Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Gary Hazeltine is on the line, and you're a detective constable with the British Transport Police based in Leeds, UK, right? Did I get it all? Good. Now what exactly does a detective constable do?
In the British scheme of policing, a detective constable is basically the skilled investigator who does the hard work and then reports back to senior officers. So he will be getting the statements, getting forensic statements, going to post-mortems, getting involved in interviewing of suspects.
So basically, like in the U.S., there'd be the investigating detective.
That's right, yeah. It's a specialist role, and you do a specialist course.
Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about this interest you have in UFOs, and you started a website with the information, the database, back in 2002. Is that right?
That's right. I launched the PRUFOS Police Database, PRUFOS being the acronym for Police Reporting UFO Sightings, and it basically caters for serving and retired British police officers. But my interest began many, many years before. I'm now nearly 47, but when I was 15, I had a sighting of an object that was corroborated by a then-girlfriend that sort of fired my interest in the subject, having had none before.
Now, usually something like that does trigger our interest. However, I've been doing UFO shows for a long time, and I did not see my first UFO until I was in Phoenix doing the Phoenix Light Show a couple of years ago, and saw a flying triangle. What did you see, a light in the sky, or what?
Well, mine was, in terms of a light, nothing more, nothing really structured, but there were some sort of physical interaction in the form of power cuts. Basically what happened was I was walking a then-girlfriend home, and we were crossing a very darkened area between a large gardening plot and some school playing fields, and we were along a narrow footpath that effectively went right through the middle of this area, and it was near 8-9 o'clock in the evening on a warm August night, clear, loads of stars out, and as we were walking along this narrow footpath, we suddenly see from our right at about a 60 degree angle an extremely bright white light moving very slowly from my right to left, and effectively went across our path, and no sooner did it go beyond us, as it were, or passed by us, then the housing estate and lights in the area that I could see ahead of me suddenly was plunged into darkness, i.e. with a power cut. And rightly or wrongly, the girl that I was with started crying and associated the power cut with the light that we'd just seen pass by us. Now, we kept watching the light, and it was moving very slowly. It was just a background of stars behind it. There didn't appear to be any noise, and then there appeared to be a second power cut further behind the area of the flight path of the object. And then, because I had my bicycle with me, I decided to say, right, I'm going to get you home as quick as I can. So she got on the bike, I got on the bike, and we rushed down to the end of this alleyway, and a couple of minutes later I was at her house. And the reason why I dropped her off is because I thought that if I could take a shortcut, the object was heading in the direction of my home, and it was moving slowly enough that I thought I may be able to get ahead of the light or get near to the light again if I took a shortcut. So that's what I did. I dropped her off and then got on my bike and then really pedaled like mad, and took a shortcut and eventually got level with the light, which was now on my right shoulder, as it were. I then got ahead of the light and went from an area that was in power cut darkness into where electricity was still showing. So therefore, the object was now slightly behind me.
Now, when you got home, what happened?
Well, I got home. I then raced into my house. My parents were having supper, a cup of tea, and I said, look, you're not going to believe this, but I think this light may cause a power cut. Come out into the garden with me. It's coming overhead. And basically they just looked stunned and bemused and sort of didn't move. And I knew I had to get out there quick, so I raced through the house, out into the back garden, turn around to see the light effectively coming over my rooftop. And at the point when no sooner it was 90 degrees, therefore once it had gone beyond the 90 degrees above where I was standing, amazingly our house and the area surrounding was plunged into darkness as well.
Wow.
It was, and at that point there, I think from a second geographical point, it would be fair to say that that light somewhere had triggered a power cut. The first time may have been coincidence, the second time may be coincidence, but from the second geographical position, how could I predict almost the very second when there would be a power cut? And the house was plunged into darkness for about 30 minutes, and then the power came on.
Your parents probably became believers.
I told you so, and they're getting the candles out, and they just said, no, it's just a coincidence.
Oh, really?
They didn't believe me. They didn't know what it was, but they just put it all down to coincidence.
Yeah, now you have on your website lots of on-duty and off-duty reports. Any reports similar to this first one you had? Lots. I mean, we've had reports of power failures in connection.
Well, just running on from that, as a result of that sighting, I did what probably most people do when they've had some sort of UFO experience. If they've had no interest before, they then suddenly are puzzled by what they've seen, and they go probably try to track down any documentaries, any books, etc. Now, of course, we're talking the mid-1970s, so I went to my local bookstore and tried to find any books I could find on UFOs, and funnily enough, the very first book that I came across was one of Donald Kehoe's, which was obviously, I then began to experience and read about reports of pilots. But in amongst that, there were stories of power cuts in America, and I figured that at that point there, maybe it wasn't such a strange thing to suggest that this light had triggered the power cuts. But going on to answer your question, of the 213 reports I now have on the database, none of them have triggered what you would call a power cut.
Are most of these reports that you have there now, are they more recent?
Well, they span quite a big timescale. From 1909 is the first report that I've got, going through to 2005.
So over a long period of time, you were able to find over 200 and some odd reports, official reports from police departments, is that correct?
Well, no, there's a combination. Basically, bear in mind that effectively nobody had ever done this type of research before. I obviously became aware through books that there'd been many sightings around the world involving police officers, and obviously many in the US. But when I came to thinking about launching the database in England for British officers, I'd only about a half a dozen references in books about British police sightings. So I perhaps maybe had six cases involving 10 officers, and they were all the book references. Now, what I do is, as a result of launching the database, I obviously offer serving and retired officers the opportunity to come forward, many of which do. But by the same token, I then trawl out newspaper archives, pursue British Freedom Information requests. So the sources can come from a whole variety of places.
If I understand it correctly, you do have other policemen helping you at this point, or at least they're cooperating.
Well, I don't have anybody working with me. Basically, probably about a third of the cases on the database are a direct result of the creation of the database, i.e. that they are serving or retired officers that actually approach me in some form or another, and a dialogue has begun, and they told me their stories. And many of these cases are otherwise unreported. They were never reported officially, and they weren't reported generally. The reasons why they're not reported, as they tell me are twofold. One is the fear of ridicule, and two, a perceived possible risk to their career if they suddenly come out with these sort of pretty crazy stories to what most people would have you believe.
Yeah, I understand. Has it hurt your career? I mean,
No, I've tried to be as transparent as possible. When I had the idea to launch the database, what happened was that a few years ago, there used to be a national magazine in Britain called UFO Magazine.
I've had the privilege of meeting him. He's a great guy.
That's right. Now, I approached Graham in November of 2001, and I said, look, I've had this idea for this database about trying to get police officer stories and collating them and getting officers to come forward. Would you allow me to do an article for the magazine in an effort to sort of publicly launch the subject and the database? And he very kindly said, yeah, you write me an article and I will publish it. And as it turned out, it launched in January with the January issue of the then UFO magazine. And Graham, up to his death, was a very big supporter of the database, and I owe him a great deal of gratitude.
We are talking with a police officer, a detective, who has his own UFO site connected to official UFO police reports. I get, did I more or less characterize what you do on there?
Well, what you must understand is that my work is not done on an official capacity.
Yeah, I understand.
I do it in an unofficial capacity, for want of a better word, as a hobby. However, I make that clear that any reports that I do, any articles, etc., it's my own opinion. Now, basically, to say official documents, many do relate to official documents, but many do not because of the reasons I've explained. Basically, they wouldn't have ever come forward and reported the stories to me if it wasn't for the existence of the database.
You've been doing...
I've given an outlet, I suppose.
Yeah. You've been actually, I guess, since you got that first book at the library, been more or less a UFO researcher on your own for 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be true to say that I've keenly followed the subject. And, you know, I mean, I had a bit of an oasis in the sense of after my initial sighting at 15, I then went out, got as many books as I could find. At that time, there weren't videos, etc., so it was mainly books. There were very few magazines, there were little UFO clubs and who produced their own little newsletters, etc., but nothing that you could recognise as a magazine as such. So I joined BUFOR, which was the British UFO Research Association, still in existence and an important organisation. And I stayed with them in an associate capacity for a couple of years. I went to a couple of local group meetings, but for a variety of reasons, I never became an active researcher, but I had the interest. I then sort of had a family and went away and had a life, etc., and drifted away from the subject in terms of research for many years. And it was only in the mid-1990s when I suddenly came across in Leeds a glossy publication which turned out to be Graham Birtle's UFO magazine on the newsstand in a big newsagent's, that I thought, wow, what is this? You know, this is something I'd love to read. And I then began to collect the magazine and sort of reacquaint myself with the latest developments. And so I'd probably had a break of 17, 18 years, and it was during that process of reacquainting myself with the subject that I then began to note books like Above Top Secret, Beyond Top Secret by Tim Good, which contained, to me as a police officer now looking at the subject as an established detective, I now began to look at this subject through forgive the pun, through police eyes. And I then began to think, well, actually, far from the public or the media's how they put the subject across, i.e. there's very little to this subject evidentially, I found exactly the opposite. And I would come across these pilot reports, astronauts, cosmonauts, radar operators, you know, very credible high witness, high caliber witnesses. And there was radar tape, documentation, there was trace evidence that had been recorded over many years. And I'm thinking, well, this does not tie in with the public perception of the subject. And so it was after a couple of years of reacquainting myself with the subject that I found myself wanting to get involved, and that led me to then go to some of the conferences that were held in the UK. Graham Birdsley, UFO magazine, he used to organise a 3-day large European event in Leeds, and I was working in Leeds, so it was, you know, a combination of factors, luck, whatever, but something drew me to start going to these meetings. And I started to see the lectures by Michael Hessman, Roger Lee, people like that, Stanton Friedman, and I began to think, I want to get involved. But as a busy working detective, it was difficult to think of a way in which I could actually do something and sort of really get involved.
Yeah, I understand how all this came about now. Thank you for letting our audience understand that. I'm going to draw up on your investigations and your investigative ability and your training when I come back from the commercial, and I want to get your opinion about exactly what we are dealing with UFOs. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back with Gary Heseltine.
Major sighting here
on the 13th of March. Weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently. And no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now, suddenly six amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw strange lights.
A series of strange bright lights seen over the skies of Arizona gets a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing new.
The award-winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Kutaw, The Phoenix Lights, is now available from ShopJerryPippin.com. Order now. Supplies limited. This is the UFO Files. I'm Jerry Pippin. On the line from England, we have Gary Heseltine, and he's a detective. And he has been putting his professional wit, as you can tell from our previous conversation last segment, into the investigations of UFOs. What do you make of it all after all these years, Gary, and your investigations? What's happening with extraterrestrials? Do you believe in a extraterrestrial presence?
Absolutely. Anybody who looks at the data that I look at, i.e. the best high-caliber witness categories, the astronauts, cosmonauts, commercial pilots, military pilots, radar operators, observer corps, scientists, senior military officers, admirals, colonels, generals, the documentation that, you know, whether it be from any country in the world, there is now absolutely thousands upon thousands of official military documents relating to UFOs. I have absolutely no doubt that a small proportion of all UFO sightings are indeed of an extraterrestrial origin.
You even examined radar reports, didn't you? I guess the operators themselves and what they said.
Put it this way, I mean, I've always been drawn right from that first Keyhole book, UFOs Are Real, that basically these high-caliber witnesses, they, if you examine them in detail, how do you explain them? And you use a logical thought process of elimination. And if you have to make that difficult choice at the end that says it's not conventional, we should be prepared to make that decision. Now, unfortunately, the vast with cases. I have 6 cases on the police database that relate to radar, either radar confirmed, involving police officers. But for the last 3 years, effectively since the death of Graham Birdsall and the closure of UFO magazine, I have produced my own monthly PDF colour magazine called UFOMonthly.com. And in that capacity, I've done research with people who've approached me who are not just police officers, all manner of people. Now, some of those people have been military people. And I've learned of several military radar cases that I've highlighted in the magazine that's come my way. So I have absolutely no doubt that not only police officers, but a great deal of military people all over the world have had absolutely fantastic first-hand evidence of radar confirmed.
What do you make of the media and their dismissal of all this?
Right, okay. Well, let's just run a couple of examples pertinent to myself and the database. When the database launched in that January issue of 2002, obviously I put a press release out and there was quite a lot of media pick-up. But over the last 3 years, despite the fact that my report has been growing with probably 100 officers added each year to the number, the interest from the media to the database is reducing drastically. Now, you would have thought that when you hit a ballpark figure of 500 British police officers, that's quite a sizable total, especially when it came from about 10 just 5 years ago. So in 5 years, we've effectively done 100 officers each year, and each year I do an annual report, and I thought, Christ, the figure's here, we've got 500 cases, 213 cases, 500 officers. I thought that is, by any stretch of imagination, should be a newsworthy sort of headline figure. So what I did, I purposely printed off the report and did individual packages to every editor of every national newspaper in Britain and every TV company in Britain. All in all, about 36 packages went out. Not one picked up.
Not one.
Now, in a world, you know, I find that absolutely amazing. The reason why, one of the primary reasons why I launched the database is to draw credible evidence from credible people that can be published around the world, whether it's Britain, wherever, but to say, look, these are very credible, respectable people making very incredible sightings. And the other thing that absolutely has amazed me is that for the first 5 years, I didn't do any statistical research of the data, simply because I didn't think that the data sample was actually big enough. But when you get to 213 cases and 500 officers, I thought, I'll start to do some statistical work here. And, for example, things leap out at you like 75% of the cases on the database and multiple officer corroboration. Now, straight away, that strikes me that that will really irk a sceptic, because it's quite the contrary to this image that he's put over, oh, it'll be a police officer at 3 in the morning, he's tired, etc., etc. 75% of the cases on my database are multiple officer. I mean, I've had cases involving up to 20 officers, 15, 20, 17, and 20 of the cases are actually multiple UFO sightings, and 75% of those are multiple officer corroborated. So, you know, those are just some of the statistics that started to come out, and I'd attached them to the reports and these packages to all these TV companies and newspapers, and not one. So I find that odd. You know, I would have thought that it was newsworthy. Having been newsworthy before at the launch, I would have thought when you hit 500, it would have been somewhat of a headline.
Have you ever had a chance to talk to anybody in the media that doesn't pay attention to you to ask them why? I mean, the stats you just quoted, you know, that's pretty phenomenal.
Well, when you do your radio interviews and your TV appearances and documentaries, I find very, very strange things happen. Normal, logical people, very bright, intelligent people, actually turn a blind eye to the evidence that I show them. For example, I've got involved in several documentaries over the last 5 years that have aired in the UK, on Sky, etc. And when they come to my home or whatever, I've shown them a selection of some of the, what I consider the best evidence, best sightings and things like that. And they are absolutely fascinated, and I show them footage, etc., fleet footage from Mexico, you know, fixed fleet footage, etc. And they're absolutely blown away. And I say, well, are you going to report on this? Oh, no, we're just sticking to what our agenda is. And I think that is a key word. The majority of documentaries that are made, they only stick to the agenda. And it's effectively, we've already planned what we're having. Regardless of any evidence that comes through, it will take this format. And the vast majority of documentaries that are produced for terrestrial TV and commercial channels follow a basic pattern of, well, the first 20 minutes we'll show you a few pilots, a few good cases like that, a bit of radar stuff, and then we'll talk about 20 minutes of the history of the subject, and in the last 20 minutes we'll then show you people who are at the extreme end, the ones who have got psychological problems, you know, etc. And I purposefully do believe that this is an effort to keep the status quo. What I don't understand as a police officer is why, if you are trying to do about programs on UFOs that purport to tell the story of evidence, why you go and rake up cases that are weak evidence. To my mind, if I was going to go to court, I would only research the best evidence. I would only present in court the best evidence. And unfortunately, the vast majority of TV documentaries do not do that. How many times do you see a documentary that's purely devoted to pilots, commercial, purely devoted to commercial, military pilots, devoted to space anomalies involving astronauts, cosmonauts? I mean, there are many confirmed video interviews with astronauts, cosmonauts, etc. Why are there no documentaries on... There has been a series recently, the UFO Files, the American series, which has been by far the best series I've seen, especially with some of their 3D graphics of cases, which, when you put a 3D graphic, even to an old case from the 40s and the 50s, providing the testimonies of these high-caliber witnesses, backed up by the then radar setting, etc., you now put a graphic to that with the, you know, the wonder of technology now. And I think that if the vast majority of the public were to see this on the 6 o'clock news, they would be blown away by the reality of what people actually see: multiple aircraft and things like the fleet footage. You know, how comes I've never seen a documentary about fleet footage? How can 500 spheres hold a position in the sky and do not move? They retain their position against the wind. Why do we not concentrate on our best evidence? And I think that's because there is
Right, you bring up a very good point. We're almost over for this particular show, but what about the best evidence? Can you give me an example of one of your investigations that still stands out to you?
One of my favorite cases involving British police officers is a police constable called Eric Raymond, R-A-Y-M-E-N-T, and basically he told me, this is one I've had personal dealings with, that when he was a police officer, he was in a rural location in Buckinghamshire, and it was sort of 3 a.m, no light because it's rural, and he's parked up with another police officer, and in total there are 3 uniformed police officers just having a chat. And And they're chatting away. Suddenly they see a flash in the distance that's only on for 2 or 3 seconds. They look, think that's odd, and then the flash goes, and they don't think really anything too far, because it's too far away to distinguish. Suddenly, 5 minutes later, as they're stood there, suddenly there is an extremely, almost as if somebody's turned on a light, this object appears in front of them at a distance of a quarter of a mile, which is, what, 400 metres or so, at an altitude of only 500 feet off the ground. It's a rural location, there's no street lights anywhere, and this object they describe as one large object with smaller objects flying around it. It's the size of a football field. It's shining a beam down to the ground, the width of a football field. It's moving in total silence across the terrain. They all see it, they all observe it for a full 5 minutes, and then suddenly it blinks and it is gone. It didn't go up, it didn't go left, it didn't go right, it just simply disappeared in front of their eyes. And cases like that, obviously multiple corroborated, I think, wow. One of the key things is, what is the motivation for that officer to come forward with a story like that? He never reported it. They never reported it for fear of ridicule, but they all know what they saw.
Yeah, didn't I? We urge people, we have a link on our website to go to your website, and they can find it for the radio listeners. It's prufospolicedatabase.co.uk.
Correct.
And Gary, we'll be back to talk to you again. It's been an absolutely enthralling half hour.
I will speak to you anytime you want.
Thank you very much.
Scorpion Patrol Base,
Adam. Gary Hazeltine, interesting man, interesting website. Police reports on UFOs. Hey, this program has been produced by James Swartley. I'm Jerry Pippin. Until next time, cheers.
Base, copy.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.